Third Coast Digest is brought to you in part by 91.7 FM, WMSC Frontier Radio.
Nick Kosovich.
Yep.
Ira Koplowitz.
Yep.
Your
intoxicologists.
Okay, I like that even better than mixologist. You're a toxicologist. That's very good. Because I was into the whole difference between mixologist and bartender. In the dictionary, mixologist is bartender. Same, I mean, bartender is a mixologist. But mixologist has a more Damon Runyon, kind of more complicated guy mixing lots of different things together. But intoxicologist tells the whole story.
It's a bit more... I think people at times take themselves a little too seriously when they give themselves the title mixologist. Generally, we like to say we're bartenders, but we've been given the title mixologist, and sometimes we have to use it. But I think intoxicologist is just a funny way to kind of describe it.
Yeah, it is. It's funny.
We take our craft very seriously, but we try not to take ourselves too seriously. So when we started at Bacchus, when we saw the first ad for our program, it said Bittercube Master Mixologists, and we're like, wow, how did we get that title? We were always curious how you became a master mixologist, and all it takes is somebody to put it on paper.
Yeah. Right. Once it's on paper.
Yeah, that's the key to marketing.
Right.
Put it on paper, say it, put it on paper again, again and again, say it enough.
What we do is resident mixology for different restaurant groups. So we start at a place very... consistently, we're there, probably both of us, for the first couple months every day, training the bar staff. And then we slowly taper off as we start to work on other projects.
Right, right. Now, when you train a bar staff, because I know going to your website, which is Bittercube, which I should say, when we'll say again and again, that you make your own bitters.
Mm-hmm.
And what else do you make? What else?
Well, in-house, we make syrups, generally seasonal syrups.
Right.
We do tinctures, which are single flavor profile alcohol extractions.
Right.
The bitters being kind of the crowning jewel, I guess some would say. Liqueurs.
And you make your own liqueur.
Yeah, that's the big one. I mean, the bitters and the liqueurs are really what we're starting to kind of show around the country.
Right.
We're currently in the works with doing national distribution of our products, and so all the other stuff we kind of do in-house per cocktail menu, let's say we're making a drink and we say this would work really well with rosemary, we'll make rosemary tincture, but we're not making it in large batches and selling it to other bars and restaurants. But the bitters, we do that.
So if you go in and train the bar staff, then you leave behind as part of their tools.
Yeah, they have to buy them from us. It's a catch. It's really
you're
smart.
Not giving this away.
Yeah. So we hold the recipes for the bitters and liqueurs very close to the hip.
Right.
Which is traditionally the way bitters houses work. Angostura, I don't know, Ira probably knows more concrete information about it, but as far as the recipe goes, only a few people know.
Yeah, and Angostura being the most famous bitters bottle.
That's the only one I know. I didn't know there was, until I drank at Bacchus and met you guys, I didn't actually know that there were other kinds of bitters.
Yeah, I mean, there's a handful of bitters on the market. Before Prohibition, there were a great number that were used in cocktails. It first started out for medicinal use, like most things that are consumed with alcohol in them. Started out for medicinal purposes, and then people started to use them for other uses. So.
If you have one, it's good for your health. If you have three, it's good for the health of the party, maybe. So,
yeah. So back to Angostura, the recipe is only known by 5 people in the world, and when one of those people passes on, the other 4 elect a 5th person to join the circle, and they go to some
secret
hidden
place.
Sanctuary and
deep in the woods
and teach them the intricacies of that recipe.
So I think one thing that's really interesting about our kind of what we call our cocktail program is called craft bartending, and the cocktails that we develop, we call them neoclassical. I think that part of what our program does is there's a lot of education. So you're drinking and learning at the same time. So, we talk about bitters, and there's always a story. There's a story attached to every ingredient that we use.
Right.
So,
well, then you're getting back over to what I think of bartending as a form of entertainment in a way, as well as a form of intoxicology.
Mm-hmm.
But a bartender is a person that you go to hear good stories, tell good stories. He's a good audience. He's a good entertainer. He stands behind his bar. That's his theater.
Mm-hmm.
And but so the education part of it, and especially I've watched the way you guys do it, I mean, is very entertaining.
Yeah, I guess that's probably our shtick. I mean, you know, people, I think that, yeah, you know, a lot, there's bartenders that you want to go and they should know about the scores of all the local sports teams and
right.
have those conversations about who's doing what, and that's not really our focus. Our focus,
I mean,
is
I can do that too.
Ira does that more than I do, but I think, you know, just our conversations are generally geared towards what's happening in the drink and
what we're making.
And, yeah,
right. And it's interesting too, because I don't drink anymore, but listening to people talk about it, it's like listening to, and I know that some people, don't they call themselves bar chefs or
yeah, that's yeah. Another,
yeah.
Another title.
One of those goofy terms.
Right. But there's an element of, it really makes me want to drink again when I hear people talk about these. I know. It's bad for me. So let's talk about sports.
Right.
But, I mean, it sounds like eating a fine French meal or eating a fine Italian yep. meal. There's layer upon layer upon layer of tastes, mm-hmm. the way you guys talk about it and the way it.
It's part of the renaissance of the craft, of the cocktail movement, is that. I mean, you saw, you know, up until craft breweries started in the late 70s, you just basically saw pilsners and some imports, but there wasn't really much on the horizon as far as any kind of craft beer being consumed. And you see today with, I mean, there's hundreds of craft breweries all around, and that movement starting, as well as the craft distillery movement, you're starting to see distilleries open up. I think 10 years ago there was something like 12 distilleries in the country.
Yeah.
And there's something like over 100 now.
And on top of that,
I could be messing up these terms, but it's that vast in a
right.
short amount of time.
So. There was just a
how much time? Just a second. How
in like 10 years.
In 10 years, yeah. Okay.
There was just a conference in Kentucky, a whiskey conference, and we had some friends that were there, and they said every person that was there that they met was either in the process of starting a distillery or
had
it's going to triple or quadruple again in the next few years, because it's
which is great, because it means people are really, rather than just going out to sort of slam themselves in the face and get drunk, they're going out to taste things.
Yeah.
Well, it's bringing it back to like local. It's that local vor movement too in cocktail form, where, you know, when we do our cocktail program and we're writing a new menu, we're always thinking about local spirits and products. So,
right.
you know, you'll see Ray Horst and Death Store, Prairie Organic, all these, you know, things from Minneapolis, Madison, Milwaukee
right.
on our menus, because we want to support people that are local.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't want to sound pretentious. Nick and I will go out for a shot and a beer all the time. You know, we'll go out for a shot of Jim Beam.
Shots and beers.
But, you know, we also see that there is a need for people to put down the vodka seltzer that has no flavor in place of something that has layers of flavor to it.
Right.
So, and that's something that we take pretty seriously.
Well, it makes it more fun. But it's interesting, especially introducing yourself as intoxicologist, because my sense of drinking, my whatever's left in my memory of remembering when I was drinking, is that one or two or three, and after that, lots of stuff is fairly numb, and the taste, you don't know that, don't notice the taste anymore.
Yeah, we don't have, like, at Bacchus, you know, we do late night program now, Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights,
right.
till 1 a.m, and we're getting a younger crowd. The music, we turn it up a little bit, turn the lights down, and, you know, we don't get people coming in to this style of drink making. They're not coming in to get lit up, you know. It's generally people have 2 to 3 drinks,
right,
maybe
right.
a little bite to eat, and they move.
And make
out,
a drink last for a while and have some good conversation.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully we generally try to ask the guests to take longer with their drink than it took us to make it, you know.
We try to excite all the senses. I mean, and it's not just about drinking it.
Putting
it's
something
about,
in your body, right?
It's about seeing the way it's made. It's about seeing what goes into it. It's about smelling it and
right.
smelling the what, you know, the garnish as well as what's in it.
Right.
It's about the feeling that it gives you. It's about the mouthfeel. It's not just about putting it in your body to consume it. It's
the ambiance of the bar as well as part of that drinking experience. And
right.
so it becomes a whole experience.
Now, how long have you been doing this? Because you guys seem, if I mention around town that I'm doing a series on mixologists, they say, get Nick and Ira. Because you guys seem to be the crest of the wave or the beginning of the wave or the whatever. It's been going on for 10 years. How long have you guys been doing this?
I've been in restaurants eight or so years.
Okay.
Starting out, I mean, I've pretty much done every job in a restaurant, from the very back dishwashing up to front of the house managing. So, but working behind the bar was always the most exciting for me.
Yeah.
I was always a foodie since I was quite young, and so bringing those two together for me was an important thing. I worked in Boston for a couple of years, more doing farm to glass style cocktails, and it's a different type of movement than what we're doing now.
I'll say that again.
Farm to glass. It's just like farm to table as well, where you're trying to source as much local organic product as you can.
And right.
There's kind of a style of drink making that embodies that, where you're using a lot of food,
mm-hmm.
like food type stuff in your drinks.
Oh, cool.
And then I worked in Chicago at a classic cocktail bar called the Violet Hour for 2.5 years, just kind of honing my skills in the classic cocktail world and just learning how to not only craft drinks but create the bitters and the syrups and that kind of thing. So
right.
It's been like a 4-year process, I guess, of cocktails.
I've been in the industry for over a dozen years. Basically, I think we both. Went to college and then started working in restaurants. And I ran a cocktail program in Minneapolis called the Town Talk Diner. Well, that was the restaurant anyway. Managed that place. And we kind of met in the cocktail circuit. And I went to his bar and realized I didn't know anything. And
which wasn't true.
So we kind of just really played well off of each other and decided to move to Milwaukee. Because we thought that there was room for us to grow here.
Okay, so this wasn't originally home to either one.
No, we've been here for like 8 months.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, welcome then.
Thank you.
I'm glad you're here. Well, now, this is a horrible question because it's like asking an actor, what's your favorite part? And there's not. Do you have a favorite cocktail that you like to make?
For me, it's the Aviation cocktail. It's a classic drink. It's a light gin, a fresh lemon juice, a maraschino liqueur, and a little bit of simple syrup, and it gets rinsed with a violet liqueur.
Uh-huh.
It's like the reason I love to make it for someone is it's a converter drink. It's the best of all converter drinks. So
What's a converter drink?
Well, everyone knows the story. I don't drink gin because I drank gin once and I got sick, and so now I don't do it anymore.
Mother's milk, they used.
Yeah, and so that so basically, I'm like, well, let me get this straight. You're probably drinking gin in college from a 1.75 liter plastic bottle with juice, and you really probably just drank too much of it.
Right.
They're like, yeah, you're probably right. So a converter drink is something that is a cocktail that you make for someone that converts them to a spirit that they thought they didn't like.
Oh, okay.
And so this one is really light and really refreshing, and I've maybe in the 3 years I've been making it, had it come back two or three times of the probably hundreds of times I've made it for people to convert them over to gin. And then once you get them into gin, then you can kind of do some other fun things. And
then there's all kinds of other stuff to do.
For me, it's that I love that conversion.
Right.
I love that, like, when someone's eyes go, oh, my God, maybe I do like gin or whatever the spirit may be.
Well, that's a great feeling to convert someone. Yeah. It's a great name, too. So, Nick?
I think we make a lot of Sazeracs right now, and Sazerac is a cocktail that was invented in New Orleans,
1806.
It's a rye cocktail, rye whiskey,
right.
Peychaud's bitters, and then there's a little bit of, we use like a Demerara sugar, and but it's unrefined, so it kind of has more of a reminiscent of sugars that maybe were more available in the 1800s.
Right.
And so then there's a little bit of absinthe in a short glass filled with ice. Chill the glass down, rinse it with the absinthe, stir this cocktail very delicately, pour it in the glass, garnish it with lemon oil. You peel the lemon and just express the oils into the glass, throw it away. And so what you're left with is just a glass with a reddish-brown liquid in it. and it's so simplistic.
Right.
And when a guest tastes that done correctly for the first time, you just see their eyes light up, and they see all the work that you did to put this little right. glass of liquid in front of them, and it's just the most flavorful, aromatic cocktail. And so that's like a, you know, he's talking about converter drinks. I think the Sazerac's one of those drinks that when you turn someone onto a drink like that, that it makes it hard for them to drink elsewhere. And we like that. We like people sure. that, you know, like, I can't have cocktails unless I'm, you know, in front of you guys. Yeah, it's job security. So
there's a little bit of a messianic thing you guys have going on. Thanks for coming in, though. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for having us.
Congratulations, too, and welcome again to Milwaukee.
Thank you.
Yeah.